Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. And like my guest, Frank Joseph, one of the contributors of chapters in Lost Secrets of the Gods, we seek to know on a deeper level what historians over the centuries may have overlooked or not fully understood. As seekers of a truer view of mankind and eternal universal source for creation and evolution, we are continually expanding our awareness and connections to each other and to the past for a greater realization of our true potential to thrive and go beyond merely surviving in the physical world, to manifest our greatest dreams and visions. Hello, Frank.
Hello. That's a very beautiful introduction. It's a pretty hard one to follow.
We'll follow it greatly, you'll see. As listeners of Healing From Within are aware, this show offers insights into the world of continuous realities and possibilities. As we truly begin to know ourselves as multidimensional beings who must, I'm very much so at this time now, with the world being in the state it is, we must individually and collectively work together to foster better relationships and communities that can provide for the well-being, health, and bring prosperity for everyone. The authors on the show explore the world of human nature and the metaphysical world, where science, spirituality, and intuition reach beyond that of our senses to the world of energy and new perceptions. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Frank Joseph, who has authored more books about the lost civilization of Atlantis than any other writer in history, and was the editor-in-chief of Ancient American, a popular science magazine. Frank has participated in hundreds of underwater expeditions from the Eastern Mediterranean Sea and the Atlantic Ocean off North Africa. Frank is a professor of world archaeology at Japan's Savant Society. His many and varied accomplishments and interests will in this show shed light on what many may only dream about, but which some people are able to embrace, not merely as supposition, but as fact. And this can only improve our understanding beyond what is known in history books, shedding new awareness of little-known miracles or truths. Frank, you know, I often ask my guests to think back to their childhood and earliest recollections or experiences, because it seems to me that many of our interests, values, and goals seem to present themselves early on in life. Can you share a story or an experience from childhood?
Well, that's very insightful, I'm sure, and certainly the things that happen to us in our formative years definitely form what happens to us later on as we develop. The only thing that comes to mind is that when I was very young, I had a repetitive dream. And I still have this dream from time to time, although very rarely now, every few years. And sometimes it's more clearly recollected than others. But basically this dream is that I'm walking on a shore somewhere. I don't know where. Walking along an ocean shore. And the area where I'm walking seems extremely familiar, although I don't know about it in my waking state. And I like the place very much. I feel very good. When all of a sudden there's a disturbance far out at sea. I don't know what that disturbance is, but it makes me look out at sea. And then I'm very afraid. And it all happens very quickly. And there's an enormous wave that comes out of nowhere, and sometimes I escape that wave in the dream, other times I don't, or other times, mostly, the dream just ends before the wave reaches me. So because I had this dream doesn't mean that I had to go and write about Atlantis. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but nonetheless, I do have that dream.
Well, I'm an intuitive, and I will tell you, it does have a lot to do with a past experience and a past time We come into this life and we bring with us many of the challenges and remembrances of past times and places. And even if we didn't, it would still be in our genetic code because the ancestors of these different generations are still within us, encoded within us. And perhaps in between lives, I believe something survives physical life, consciousness, and the memories. And during that time, we interact with other souls and perhaps share some of these memories. So they come back to us in this life in dreams and in a way for us to handle some of our fondest goals and desires so we can go further in this time and place in discovering something that may be reminiscent of a former time. So I think it's very important, that dream. And actually, during the course of the show, I think there will be more light shed on that. But let's go on to how you met some of the other authors who are also represented in this book, The Lost Secrets of the Gods. And what do you think readers can discover from this book?
Well, a lot of the participants in the book are already pretty well known, and I'm in very good company with them. It's my pleasure and honor to be associated with them through the book. But I think what readers can get from a book like this is an alternative view of not only our past, but where we are right now. And what our past, our history, I think is incredibly important. History is a very hated subject among students in school today, and I can understand why, because it's not really properly taught. The drama of our past is missed.
Frank, how did you feel about history as a student? It was my favorite subject.
Well, someone like yourself, and myself as well, we can look past, I think, some of the inadequacies of our education and see through the dramatic core, because history is really nothing more than the accumulation of everything that has happened in the past in ourselves. We are the outcome of everything that has happened in the past, not only our families and our own personal experiences, but everything. We are the final end result, for better or worse, of what has happened. And that's why I think history is so important. And that's one of the ideas, I think, that Lost Secrets of the Gods is trying to get across, is that history is enormously important, because what if you were to lose all consciousness of what's happened in your life except up to the past week or so? You'd be out of experience, you'd be totally disoriented, and you wouldn't be able to plan for the future. Consequently, the more you do know about yourself, the greater experience you have, the more competent a person you are. The same thing applies to whole societies, and I think that's one of the major thrusts of the book that we hope to achieve.
Yes, and I have read the whole book, so you have done a wonderful job on many different topics, which we're going to discuss now. You know, in my new book, The Living Spirit, I share my journey as a person brought up to believe in science and fact, but still appreciating history and the mystical tales of the past. But I always had to have proof that could be felt or seen as sensory beings. It was important for me to make sense of the physical world. But years ago, I had many, many mystical experiences, and in going past those limiting ideas of the mind or societal patterns, I discovered a higher reality of life, the world of energy, and our connection to universal source and evolution, and a different perspective on life and death and ways to reach our full potential. And that's what this show is about. I became a Reiki master teacher and medium, exploring the world with a new vision, much like the contributors to your book, Lost Secrets of the Gods. And for those out there who wish to explore energy healing, psychic development, afterlife, and to simply know how to awaken and develop their own spiritual awareness, they can look at your book or go to my website, CherylGlick.com. So in reading your article, Plato's Atlantis, Fact or Fiction, you gave much information about how Atlantis has been perceived over the course of time. Please share with us the way Atlantis has been thought about and its importance.
Well, you've gone right to the core of the idea. Why is it important? Why should we even know or care about this lost civilization? And if it really did exist, why should we think it's significant at all? So I think that it did exist, and I think provide a great deal of factual information to indicate that it was real. It was important because it was the first modern civilization. Not the first civilization. There were others that preceded it. But it was the first one that we can talk about that's similar to what we have today. In other words, it had an organized religion, it had armies and navies, it had medicine, codified laws, and all the rest, and was, in effect, the first real city. It was very successful, was culturally very rich, economically powerful, and lasted a long time. But it self-destructed itself. It was destroyed. It went through a period of decline. How is that possible that a society that achieved such success for so many centuries was now overcome by some foreign power, but in fact had turned against the very forces that had brought it into existence? And that is why history, and especially a society like that, is so important, because America and the West have also achieved great economic influence. We are highly civilized. We are culturally very rich, and yet there are many people today that are very uncertain about our present condition and are very concerned for our immediate future.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the problem right now. We don't have to go back to a society, the Greek or the Roman or Atlantis, to see how people can destroy, how they can have the knowledge. We have technology now. We have wisdom. We have history. And yet we are making a lot of the same mistakes. We are people who are divided and separated from the truth about who we are as energetic spiritual beings and also physical beings. And maybe because of these separations, there is so much fear that people only know how to approach things in a very aggressive, competitive way. And I think that's probably what happened in Atlantis. There were two groups of people, and those who wanted to bring everyone together and those who wanted to have perhaps more just for certain elite groups. And that could have been a possibility.
This is, I stated generally that this was a society that was perhaps similar to our own. And now to get more specific, you talk about the two groups. Well, interestingly enough, there were at least two major, very divisive groups which were responsible for the social dislocation of that society. And both of these groups murdered each other continuously over God. One believed in one form of God and the other believed in another. And we see essentially the same thing happening today, where we have the Christian West involved in now an increasingly religious struggle with the Middle East and Near East.
Yes, ISIS right now.
Both groups are very devout in believing that they are doing the will of God by killing as many of their fellow human beings as possible.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Another mistake, worse than a mistake, that the Atlanteans made is that they became so proficient in their technology and in their material wealth that they became to almost worship. They almost literally worshipped technology. They became self-indulgent, and they became convinced that with the idea that technology can do absolutely anything. And technology is a wonderful servant, but a very cruel and terrible God. And once you believe that technology can solve anything, then it means that it allows you to do anything. You become extremely immoral because, oh, well, whatever it is, we can kill a bunch of people, but, well, if we injure some of them, we can always fix them up with our medicine, or we'll give compensation for that. It's that attitude that eventually led to the Atlanteans being an extremely selfish and self-indulgent people, and that contributed to their divisiveness and eventually their downfall. And that's the great utility of history, and especially a story like this is like, well, how reflected in that experience are we? And what mistakes did they make that we might be making now that we can correct? We don't have to go the same route that other cultures like the Atlanteans went through. And this tragedy, in a sense, of Atlantis is this was a very real place. There's a huge amount of evidence to show that it existed, and yet its destruction was so thorough that it sank from being a reality into a mere legend. And I think if the Atlanteans could come back today, they would say, well, imagine that. They don't even believe we really existed. That's how thorough a civilization would be wiped out by itself.
I believe it existed, and I believe Plato believed it existed, and I believe you believed it existed. And let me just say this. In describing Atlantis, you did a wonderful job of describing the city. You described at the center was a wall of gold surrounding the location of where long ago Poseidon, god of the sea, had lay with a mortal woman to engender the ruling lineage of Atlantis. So here was the thought that perhaps higher beings or gods or angels merged with humans to help advance evolution, which is a possibility that some believe. But I'd like to share a story here for you. Years ago, Frank, I was taking an energy healing class with an Australian teacher of transcendental meditation, and she led the group. This was in San Francisco. I had traveled from New York to take this class. That's how important it was to me. And she led the group into a deep meditation, and I suddenly found myself moving under the water to a large island with buildings of gold and immense proportions. And I thought to myself, how am I swimming under the water without breathing apparatus? So I later realized it was an out-of-body experience and was my soul energy doing that amazing feat. When the meditation ended, I told the man next to me what I had experienced, and he said to me that in a pyramid in Peru, he had experienced the same dream or vision, and he knew the city was Atlantis. So perhaps those deep-rooted memories are part of the evolution of humanity, and at certain moments we glimpse a view of the past and a beauty of the physical and spiritual worlds and our own potential as human beings. Or perhaps we had a time, our soul had a time, in being in that place. So it's similar to the dream you started telling us at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, that's a beautiful experience, and it's kind of interesting because Plato describes, exactly as you said, the sacred center of Atlantis, which was this golden enclosure, and he doesn't describe whether it's actually a building or it's a partition of some kind, but certainly it's a sizable structure, and it was inside this golden enclosure that they have the like a sacred mound where this mortal woman, as you said, her name was Clito, according to Plato, lay with Poseidon, the sea god. Now, no one's ever understood exactly what that means. Was it that Poseidon represented a seafaring people that came to this island and engendered a new race, or was it something else that we're considering these days, that there was some higher being that created the hybrids that eventually form the human race? We're not quite sure. And Plato regards that as the central religious idea of Atlantis. Most of his account, though, deals with specifics. He talks about the size of the island. He talks about the population of the island, its military disposition, how it was arranged in a very unusual and beautiful way. The city itself was a configuration of alternating rings of water and land. 5 and 6 were the sacred numbers, sacred numerals applied to this layout. And these great moats of water were bridged by these structures, these beautiful bridges. The entire city was made out of mostly red, white, and black local stone. This is, of course, volcanic stone, the red tufa, the black lava, and the white pumice. He was describing the geology of a volcanic land without him even realizing that he was doing so. And this very beautiful place was open to the general public. That's the interesting thing. You could cross over these bridges and go from one ring to the next. One ring would be involved in religious ceremonies. Another one was involved with a great racetrack, a great public area. And the very center of the island had this sacred shrine, plus a huge temple to Poseidon, a gigantic temple, something like about 600 feet long, over 100 feet high. And next to that was the palace for the emperor and his royal family. And much of this was open to ordinary people on high holy days. And this place was located in a temperate zone about 260 miles due west of the Straits of Gibraltar. And that's very interesting. Plato says that Atlantis was just outside the Pillars of Hercules, which was the Greek conception for the Straits of Gibraltar. And if you look on an undersea map of that area, about 260 miles due west of Gibraltar, you will find something called the Horseshoe Seamount. And it is a large island, not a continent, a large island, somewhat circular, and it's ringed by high mountains. And this feature was above water in the recent past, within the last 10,000 years. And what's remarkable is that this Horseshoe Seamount was discovered only as recently as 1949 by Dr. Maurice Ewing. He was with the National Geographic, and he was conducting the first underwater sonar survey of the Atlantic. Sonar was a new instrument at that time developed during World War II. And they found parts of this Horseshoe Seamount, which match very closely Plato's description of Atlantis, which was a large circular island surrounded by a ring of high mountains, just exactly as he describes in his dialogue known as the Critias. So these are indications, and there are many indications like this that make a very strong case for Atlantis, so much so that if I was in a court of law, I feel I could bring in a guilty verdict on the historical reality of this place.
And I agree with you. Now, Frank, I found the article Secret Societal, Therka 10,000 BCE by Robert M. Schock.
Yes.
Very, very synchronistic to my beginning interest in intuitive healers and mediums, which began about 20 years ago, and the mystical and historical information I have been exposed to since that time, which have led me into the search into questions, who are we? Why are we having a physical life? And how have others throughout the ages searched for the miraculous story of creation and evolution? So tell us something of secret societies and what their purpose was, and about many that still continue today.
Well, I don't really want to presume too much to speak for Dr. Schock. He's certainly the expert in this, but I did read his wonderful article. And basically what he says is that these secret societies were not all necessarily evil or bad. Some of them were. The idea was that knowledge was sacred, and to attain to it, you needed to go through long periods of schooling and initiation. And as a consequence of that, they had in the ancient world something known as mystery schools. And they were called mystery because they were not open to the general public. You had to prove your worthiness not only intellectually, but also spiritually. You had to have an open mind.
Robert actually wrote in the article, maybe this will help us, in ancient civilizations, a class of initiates had precise knowledge of harmonic laws. They knew how to manipulate them to create precise effect they wanted, and they wrote this knowledge into architecture, art, music, paintings, rituals, and incenses, producing Gothic cathedrals, vast Hindu temples, all the marvels of Egypt, and many other sacred ancient works that even today in runes produce a powerful effect on us. So the thought here is, were they simply downloading the inspiration of higher beings and cultures of other worlds or universal source and intelligence? What does it really matter? We seem to be part of a greater whole and subject to help from many sources. And this is the conclusion that I make from many of the articles that I read in your book and from my own book, The Living Spirit Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. Now, in the same chapter, Robert ponders the material by remarkable philosopher and teacher, a mystic and a seeker, G.I. Gordachev, who lived from 1866 to 1949, and also his student, Uspensky, who wrote In Search of the Miraculous, Fragments of Unknown Teaching. Now, years ago, I was in a group, which you might think of as an ancient mystery group, In Search of Universal Knowledge and Wisdom, and I read about these two advanced thinkers. The name of my group was the Academy of European Art and Culture, And it was a group where meditation and a way to develop spiritual awareness and soul possibilities was emphasized. So can you tell us something of Gordachev's ideas, because they're really important in what we're discussing here?
Well, what he said is basically is that the human soul contains all of the knowledge that humanity has learned and will learn. He was referring to a statement by Plato. Plato's statement was the basis for Gyorgyev's philosophy. And Plato's statement was that the best teacher cannot hope to impart learning to anyone. The best teacher can only hope to awaken what the student already knows. So what the basic premise of this is that by opening oneself properly, this is the basis for real learning and for real understanding, because ideas are already in the air, as it were. This inflected on another thinker. His name was Teilhard de Chardin. He lived, I think, as recently as the 1950s. He was a Catholic priest, and he extended this idea and said that there's an actual ring of the atmosphere. He called it the noosphere. And the noosphere contains all of the feelings and all of the thoughts, all of the mental accomplishments, intellectual accomplishments of mankind, and that we can sometimes, through inspiration, through music or art or altered states of consciousness, tap into this noosphere.
They're not only saying that it is absolutely true. You have spent a lifetime dreaming about it and researching it, because the hope is always to know ourselves better, the world, and to create a place of beauty and love while we're here. So I want to thank you, Frank Joseph, for representing all the contributors for Lost Secrets of the Gods, which is an eye-opening look at the magic and treasures of lost times, places, and people who still intrigue and teach us to look beyond the obvious to the greater truth of life and creation. Please go to koreapress.com or newpagebooks.com to purchase Lost Secrets of the Gods. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, it has been my pleasure to read the studies and research of leaders in the field of science, archaeology, history, the occult, and ancient religions in trying to understand the many challenges that face us in this generation, so we may begin to remember a time when perhaps all people knew they were more than this physical world and physical life, and the universe was a source of unending beauty, wisdom, love, and possibilities. In an article in Lost Secrets of the Gods, Jim Mars writes, "Throughout history, the two most prominent methods for controlling the human population have been religion and finance. Early humans, seeing the beauty and symmetry in nature, instinctively knew that some guiding force lay beyond the order of life, and so they developed a reverence for spiritual matters. Over time, however, and with advances in scientific knowledge, the material trappings and theologies of the various religions should have fallen away. But they haven't. Today, most of the world's population continues to follow one religion or another, leading to conflict, wars, and genocide, while most large religions are intertwined with the acquisition of money. When did finance become so enmeshed in religion? One possibility is that religion may be based on a reality that has been lost today. According to accounts in the Old Testament and later Romans, there was a time when humans experienced face-to-face encounters with their gods. Virtually every ancient culture in this world told of legends of gods who came from the sky and taught them the fundamentals of civilization, language, mathematics, astronomy, chemistry, law, architecture, and finance. Today, a growing number of researchers are taking the concept of ancient astronauts, the idea that non-humans may have visited the Earth millennia ago, and they're taking it more seriously. That thought pretty well captures the need to give serious thought to a world of possibilities beyond our ordinary thinking. I think that it may be time to remember the simpler past where higher virtues were honored and respected, and we created beautiful places like Atlantis, Greece, and Rome, and honored the higher soul essence of life connected to a higher force. Whether angels or ancient astronauts or gods worked with this human population, it was always in a way to support the best of our human and divine qualities. And we must now begin to see how cooperation and refinement of our thinking is a way to heal ourselves and the world community. Perhaps it is a time to look within to rediscover the magnificence that came from above. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to learn more about your evolving future and the way to achieve a life of purpose and passion. Also go to WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you very much.